This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today about the Martin Luther King Jr. Committee, Advocacy Committee for Justice, that sponsors the great celebration in Krannert Hall. And our guests today are Ellen McDowell and Claude Shelby. Welcome to both of you.
Very pleased to be here.
Thank you.
And
today we have two guests, and let's see, a woman and a man, a Protestant and a Catholic. And yet you both work together on this committee that provides these scholarships for minority students and others in Champaign-Urbana to go to college. Let's talk a little bit about how each of you got involved with that. Why don't we start with you, Dr. Shelby, since you're the chair of this committee and really helped start it in Champaign-Urbana. How did that all come about?
Steve, that goes back to the year of 1985 when Governor Thompson appointed me to the State Holiday Council. Governor Thompson was the vice chair of the National Holiday Council, chaired by Coretta Scott King. And it was his aim to create a holiday council for Illinois to plan the observance of the national holiday, which was to begin on the 20th of January, 1986.
Hmm.
Yeah. And so after being appointed to that committee, I was a part of the religious committee, and then I was asked to create the committee here locally to observe the national holiday, which was the first national holiday in 1986. And so I was charged with organizing the entire congressional district, but that was a monumental task that I felt was more than I could handle. So I concentrated on Champaign and Urbana.
Mm-hmm. And you did have another job at the time, or a calling. You were a pastor at the time and still are of Salem Baptist Church.
I am. I've served there for 23 years, and certainly I'm very pleased to be in this community. It's the kind of community that I always desired to live in, so the Lord has certainly given me the desires of my heart along that line.
Where were you before coming to Champaign-Urbana 23 years ago?
I pastored in St. Louis County, a small community called Robertson, Missouri. That's right over west of the St. Louis-Lambert Airport, and I was there 15 years.
Hmm. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in a small town that many of you will have heard of, Brooklyn, Illinois, downstate Illinois, which is tucked on the east side of the Mississippi River across from St. Louis, Missouri. To the south of Brooklyn is National City, and then East St. Louis to the south of National City. Then north of Brooklyn is Venice, Illinois, mm-hmm. then Madison, Illinois, then Granite City, Illinois.
Okay, all right. And Ellen McDowell, how did you get involved with this Martin Luther King committee that gives out these scholarships to students?
Well, actually, the first I heard of the committee was when Skip Thompson, a member of our parish, who was on the committee at the time and still is, asked me to write a letter to the city council in Champaign because the committee was making an endeavor to have the city of Champaign make the day an official holiday.
Right.
And so I did write that letter, and it was presented, and I stayed in touch with the committee. Then around 1995, I guess, Skip invited me to join the committee. And at that time, the secretary needed to travel, and I became secretary pro tem almost immediately. And then the secretary decided to retire, and I became the permanent secretary.
Now, you mentioned your parish. What Catholic church are you a part of?
Holy Cross Parish.
Holy Cross. And you mentioned the letter you wrote to the city council of Champaign. What was the result of that letter?
Well, Skip indicated to me that it was instrumental in having this resolution passed, and the city of Champaign did make the day an official holiday.
There are many listeners who may just have assumed that the Martin Luther King holiday has been celebrated locally and nationally forever, but you were around at the beginning.
Yes, that's true. And it was a considerable struggle.
That's right, both in this community and elsewhere.
Yes.
All right. Dr. Shelby, when you became chair of this local committee, how did you get people to serve on it?
Well, I was a member of the Ministerial Alliance of Champaign-Urbana and Vicinity. In fact, I served as a president, and also I had some connection with the Ministerial Association of the area of Champaign County. And so I wrote letters to members of both groups asking them if they would be willing to serve with me on a committee to commemorate the birth of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.
Now, this committee has both blacks and whites and Asians and others who serve on it and have served on it over the years. How do people get selected, or how is the committee formed?
Well, since its inception, we've always been open to individuals who had a heart for the dream of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., and for the most part, individuals are selected by members who are already on the committee and who feel that that person would have something to offer. And they would invite them, get permission to invite them to a meeting, and usually it proceeds from there.
Ellen, I know you have before you the list of people who are currently serving on the committee, and since
yes.
some local people may know these folks, why don't you read us the current list?
I'd be happy to. Reverend Claude Shelby, Sr. is the president. Reverend Glenn Trost, vice president. I myself, Ellen McDowell, am secretary. Doris Batts, treasurer. Ellen Bullock, statistician. Mother Mary Brooks Woods, member. Lorene Cowan, Denise Gordon, Reverend Jimmy Holmes, Sr., Reverend Cypress Hughes, Barbara Linder, Matthew Payton, Reverend Steve Shoemaker.
We can skip that one.
All right. Blanche Sudman, Skip Thompson, and Bishop King James Underwood.
Well, we want to talk about some of the events planned in Champaign-Urbana to celebrate the Martin Luther King holiday coming up next weekend. But before we do that, we do have a caller waiting, and let me just give the phone numbers for others who might like to call with a question or comment. Anywhere the program is heard, including on the Internet, you may call us 1-800-222-9455. That's a free call, 1-800-222-WILL. In Champaign-Urbana, you can reach several local lines by dialing 333-9455. So in Champaign-Urbana area, 333-WILL. And we have a caller on line one. Go ahead, please.
Thanks. I hope this is not too far afield, but in thinking ahead about what criteria might be used in selecting the scholarship winners, I naturally thought about all of the hurdles that they had to overcome, the barriers in their lives, in their homes, certainly in their schooling. And the one I came tripping over, in effect, is the difficulty, and I have to ask our guests to talk about it here in town, the difficulty I keep hearing about nationally of living in a culture, living with the peer pressure that says, do not be scholarly, do not appear intelligent, do not enjoy learning for its own sake. Now, is that something that you two have run across, heard about, or thought about? It's been on my mind, and it might be comfortable just to hear that it doesn't much exist in Champaign-Urbana. Thank you.
So the question is really whether in the youth subcultures there's much of that attitude that's often in the popular press, that it's not cool to do well in school. It's not something that you get much credit for with your peers. Have we run across that much in the young people in Champaign-Urbana who apply for this scholarship?
Well, we've seen some of that. However, we've been given this scholarship now for, I believe this would be the 17th year. And we've always felt that it was a great incentive for individuals to pursue excellence in education in order for them to move ahead in life and certainly become a part of realizing the dream of Dr. Martin Luther King of a you know, colorblind society, and our committee felt that education is one way to sort of equalize the chances for individuals to move ahead in our culture. And I do realize that, and I do hear it. I'm a pastor of a church here, and I've been for the past 23 years or better, that there are certain students who feel that if an individual is pursuing an education and pursuing educational excellence, that that would be acting white. However, I realize, and we've try to promote that in our local congregation as well as around the community, that education is very important, and individuals who feel that it's not the cool thing to do are the individuals, for the most part, who will wind up still in a state of poverty and being dispossessed of being able to realize a part of the American dream.
Now, the Martin Luther King Committee in Champaign-Urbana has over the years raised money from donors, individuals, organizations, companies, and all of that money goes for scholarships. The committee serves, the members that you listed earlier, Ellen, are all volunteers, receive no money for serving on the committee. Also, there's another scholarship committee that makes the decisions about of the young people who are high school seniors who apply, who gets the various scholarships, and there are now, what, over 50?
We have over 50 students currently
in college.
Colleges and universities around our country.
Right. And this is just a partial scholarship, of course. This is money that helps them get to college, but it can often be a deciding factor. It can help get things started. Ellen, tell us who serves on the scholarship committee.
Well, I'm afraid that's information I don't have. I believe Pastor Shelby knows.
Okay. On the scholarship committee, we have Bill Volk, who heads our transportation system here in Champaign.
MTD. Right.
And then we have Dr. Evelyn Underwood, our newest member of our committee. Then we have Dr. Bill Hoff, who's recently retired from the Upward Bound program here at the University of Illinois. And then we have Matthew Payton, who also serves on that committee, and yours truly serves as well.
And what are the criteria? The last caller was asking kind of how are these people chosen? What's looked at when these young people who are high school seniors apply for the local Martin Luther King Scholarship?
Well, the awards are given based on the academic excellence of the student, which is a part of the qualifying information that we need. We need to get their class rank as well as their GPA over their freshman through their junior year of high school. And in addition to the educational excellence, they are to prepare an essay on some aspect of the Dr. Martin Luther King dream of a better society. And that could be based on any of his speeches or any areas that he promoted over the years of his civil rights leadership.
And they also have to get recommendations from their high school counselors, principals, pastors, rabbis, whatever.
They need three letters of recommendation, and then they also should demonstrate their commitment to Dr. King's dream and also demonstrate a positive influence on others.
Okay.
Yes.
And the committee looks at all those things.
They look at all those things, the academic excellence, their commitment to the dream, and these are the things that are taken into consideration.
We do have another caller waiting on line one. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guests Claude Shelby and Ellen McDowell. Go ahead, please.
Yes, you know me. I've been there lots of times. I'm not going to give my name. I'm just going to say I'm about 17 years old and almost a nurse. I was a nurse. My question is, Dr. Martin Luther King was known for nonviolence. How does this scholarship relate to nonviolence? and I would either hang up or I will stay on the line and listen if you want more detail. Do you understand the question?
I think we understand. Thank you very much. So the question is, one of the things that Martin Luther King Jr. was known for was his commitment to nonviolence, to leading the civil rights movement in this country to make important changes, but to do it in a nonviolent way.
Certainly, Dr. King always felt that if one had to suffer for a cause, that the suffering would become redemptive and it would serve to help toward the realization of the end to which one would have striven. And so individuals who apply for our scholarship, they must be individuals who have bought into the dream of Dr. Martin Luther King to move forward in a non-violent manner and hoping to achieve the ends to which Dr. King worked.
When when the committee first began, there was some question about what the committee would do. How did this, starting this scholarship fund, how did the celebration, how did the prayer breakfast come about? It took a while for all that to happen, as I recall. I think I joined the committee on maybe its second year. I think it was in 86 I joined.
All right. Well, we certainly look back on our early beginning, and
As I recall, it took what, a year before we started the scholarships or before we had the celebration? I think the celebration, first celebration, took place in Community United Church of Christ.
That is right.
And we were in churches for a few years, and then fortunately the chancellor's office at the university was very gracious to help provide us with the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts Great Hall when we outgrew any of the local churches. There just wasn't enough space for the grand celebration with all the gospel music and the announcing of the scholarships. Now, my memory's a little bit hazy as to how many churches we were in for how many years, but
okay.
We've been at Krannert for some time now.
We started at the Community United Church of Christ. And then our next observance was held at the Community Center, Douglas Center in Champaign. And so our aim was to hold the celebration in the north side of town 1 year and then in the south side of town the next year. Mm-hmm. And we would go backwards and forth. And I believe we were at Community UCC for a couple of years. And we've also held our celebration at First United Methodist Church there on Green Street.
Mm-hmm.
And so the time did come when we did not have space in any of the churches or the public buildings, especially in the north end of town, which were large enough to hold the celebration. And then we already had a relationship with the University of Illinois because university matches our scholarships. And so we were able to get the chancellor's office to work with us in gaining access to the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. And then we've been there over the past probably 10 years.
Now, for people who may not have ever had the experience of hearing that wonderful gospel choir sing and the stirring speeches that are given at that occasion, why don't we describe what it's like? What are some of the things that happen at that celebration, Alan, on Sunday afternoon? And we might say this is coming up next Sunday at 5 o'clock at the Great Hall at Krannert Center.
At Krannert Center. It's a community celebration in every sense of the word. And the music starts immediately. It starts even before the program, so people should come early. It's a true celebration in the sense that I think the young people who are receiving the scholarships and their families reflect the feeling that education is emancipatory. Uh-huh. And this is the day to really celebrate that. And the members of the committee are there. The highlight of the afternoon is the presentation of the scholarships. and the young people walk across the stage and receive their scholarships. There's always
usually the chancellor of the university is one of the ones to give out the scholarships along with Dr. Shelby.
And welcomes the people. And, of course, there's a speaker, always a thrilling speaker. And this year, Ben Cox, Reverend Ben Cox, who was one of the original Freedom Riders, will be the speaker.
Music is a very important part of that celebration. Tell us a little bit about the choir, Dr. Shelby.
It is a wonderful celebration, and the music is always superb. We have a variety of the kinds of singing, but mostly gospel and some spirituals. Mr. Todd Taylor, who's the minister of music at Salem Baptist Church, is the current convener of the choir. And he's the minister of music there, and he certainly has done a wonderful job over the years.
He kind of coordinates it, doesn't he? He brings in other directors from other churches in town, and don't they almost compete to see who can sort of get the best sound out of the choir?
They get the best song or the best sound. Deacon Willie T. Somerville is our first director, and he comes back each year to assist. Mm-hmm. And then we have Terry Knapper. He's the minister of music at the Mount Olive Church. And by the way, Deacon Somerville is at Canaan Baptist. Most of you probably would know. And then we have other directors. We have my choir director, Mrs. Audrey Mock, who worked for Unit 4 District. And she's very good with music. And so it seems as though they do compete, and certainly it brings about a great finished product, great music.
And it's not only a choir, but there are instrumentalists, there's guitars, and a special kind of organ that's used with gospel music, there's drums. Yeah. And, of course, this is all free and open to the public. And the Great Hall will hold, I don't know how many thousand, but it's a huge—
At least two.
Yeah.
At least.
And it's always a huge crowd, but there's always room for more. And, of course, people can park right under Granite Center. It's a Sunday afternoon, so it's all open and easy parking and free. So that's next Sunday.
That is next Sunday.
At 5 o'clock at the Great Hall of Granite Center. Tell us a little bit about the speaker this year, Ben Cox.
The speaker, the Reverend Ben Cox, he now resides in Jackson, Tennessee, and there are many here in this local area who remember Ben. He was an individual who has taught in, I know, the Champaign School District, as well as he's worked over as a chaplain at the prison in Danville, and he's also served as pastor in Danville. And so he was one of the original Freedom Riders, and many of you know the outcome of the bus being burned, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But Ben certainly has always been in the forefront of justice and civil rights issues, and he believes in the American dream, and he lives it and expresses it in every walk of life.
And next week, Ben Cox will be speaking at Krannert Center at the great Martin Luther King celebration there. For those of you who are unable to come to that, you will be able to hear Ben Cox be interviewed on this program next week, too. We're pre-recording that, so it's possible for him to be in two places at once. So he will be here on Keeping the Faith next week on Martin Luther King weekend, as well as speaking in Krannert. Let's talk a little bit about the prayer breakfast. That got started a few years after the celebration on the actual Monday holiday in the morning. And this year it's in a new location at Canaan Academy in Urbana, which is just north of Canaan Missionary Baptist Church at 402 West Main in Urbana, right across from Strawberry Fields across Main Street. Canaan Academy Gym will be hosting this prayer breakfast. It's open to people of all faiths, of course. But tell us a little bit about what happens at a prayer breakfast for listeners who may never have been to one, Dr. Shelby.
At the prayer breakfast, we have individuals from all areas of our community that are usually in attendance. And at our prayer breakfast, we usually try to showcase some of our past scholarship recipients, try to encourage them to continue their quest for education and for excellence. And at the prayer breakfast, we always have a speaker. During the early years, we would always have two speakers, but we found that that didn't work so well. It lengthened the prayer breakfast to the point where it became somewhat cumbersome.
A little too long.
A little too long. I guess to put it in blunt language, too long. And so we started having just one speaker. And last year we had one of our former recipients who was an attorney down in Atlanta, Georgia. And he did a wonderful, wonderful job with us.
And this year the speaker is?
This year the speaker is Shanika Terrell, who's a 2001 King Scholar. She's a student at DePaul University in Indiana, and she'll be graduating this year. We also will have a King Scholar from 2003, Rashida Salam, who will speak about her current experiences in school. And then we will be hearing the essay, the written essay, of Tyla Connerly, who has been awarded the Herb Stevens Memorial Scholarship.
We'll talk more about that in a minute when we talk more about the scholarships. But let me just repeat, what time will the prayer breakfast be this year?
8:30.
It's at 8:30 in the morning.
That's important, 8:30.
That's the Monday of the Martin Luther King holiday.
Monday the 17th.
The 17th, and at Canaan Academy, right by, just north of Canaan Missionary Baptist Church at 402 West Main in Urbana. We have another caller who's been very patient. Let's go to line one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Oh, thank you. I've called before, but I have two comments and also one question. I know Ben Cox, and I recommend him highly. Also, I think the Martin Luther King holiday is worth celebrating. It's an ecumenical event, and all should be in attendance, I think. The question I have is, why is this special? It is special, but it's a combination of music and questions and scholarships and education. Why is it special? And I'll hang up and listen off the air.
I see it as being very special because of who Dr. Martin Luther King was. First and foremost, he was a Christian. He was a child of God. He was a worshiper of God, and he was a member of the clergy, a pastor. And what better way to celebrate the life of an individual who gave so much to our society than to have a service of celebration? And that's how it started out back in the year of 1986. And I see it as something that would be right in line with who Dr. King was, one who was for freedom and justice, even receiving the Nobel Peace Prize, certainly was a high mark in his career.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon with Claude Shelby, who is the pastor for the last 23 years of Salem Baptist Church in Champaign on the corner of Park and Fifth Street, and with Ellen McDowell, who is a member of Holy Cross Catholic Church. They are two members who serve as chair and secretary of the Martin Luther King Committee that each year plans a celebration, again at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts this year, next week on the 16th of January, Sunday afternoon at 5 o'clock, and sponsor the prayer breakfast that's the next morning, Monday the 17th at 8:30. We'll be getting back to them and talking more about Martin Luther King Jr. and the scholarship and the Advocacy for Justice Committee. But let me take a short break. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program. And it happens I have enjoyed serving on this Martin Luther King Committee as well over the many of the last years. Let me tell listeners who's coming up on Keeping the Faith in the next couple of weeks. Belden Fields, will be speaking next week. Ben Cox will be speaking next week on the Martin Luther King weekend here on Keeping the Faith about his experience as a freedom rider during the civil rights movement here in the United States. On January 23rd, Professor Belden Fields will be our guest on Keeping the Faith, talking about socialism. Belden was last on this program advocating for the living wage proposal that has been accepted in several government bodies here locally. And he's going to be talking about some of the principles and values of socialism on our program January 23rd. Then on January 30, we'll be talking about the Eastern Illinois Food Bank with Jessica Culp. That's January 30 here on Keeping the Faith, Eastern Illinois Food Bank. Support for these Keeping the Faith programs is provided in part by the University YMCA at the University of Illinois, where I'm the executive director. The Y is the oldest religious institution established at the university. It was begun by students back in 1873, and since that time has been helping develop student leaders by providing opportunities for community service and social action. It's an unusual YMCA in that it doesn't have a gym or a pool or a fitness center, but like 22 other collegiate Ys around this country and 42 elsewhere around the world, this Y finds ways to help students develop and practice their ethical lives. The Y began as a Christian organization but has been open to people of any faith. Or those who are have no faith commitments. We just had four groups take off from the Y during this winter break to go do service projects. They left the Y on Friday afternoon about 4:30, and some were driving 23 hours to a service project down in Texas. Others were going toward the west, and those are the kind of things our alternative spring break program, alternative service break program that the Y is happy to sponsor. Well, let's get back to our guest today. We're talking about the Martin Luther King celebration and the prayer breakfast. Let's talk a little bit about what it is about the philosophy, the faith of Martin Luther King Jr., that is being carried on in programs like this around the country. How did this one man make such an impact? As you say, he was a pastor. He served relatively small churches during his career. Mm-hmm. How did he make such a difference?
Dr. King certainly was a man who really made a difference. He always found himself on the cutting edge. He was somehow thrust into civil rights leadership after the bus boycott down in Alabama. And so certainly he was called upon as a local pastor to head sort of the protest. And then he sort of became the spokesperson. And from the local involvement, I was thrust into the national scene because civil rights were such such as in our nation was not championed by very many, especially in our southern states, where it came to the boiling point. And so Dr. King sort of touched the soul, I would say, of our nation.
Where were you when you first became aware of Dr. King and his leadership?
I was in downstate area, in my home area. And at the time, I pastored in 11, no, I'm sorry. I pastored in St. Louis at that particular time. Yes, and then when he was assassinated, I was still in that same area, And by the way, I did attend his funeral.
Did you?
Yeah. The service at the church, Ebenezer Baptist Church, was only by special invitation, but I was able to attend the Morehouse campus service where Dr. Benjamin Mates brought the eulogy. Mm. And so Dr. King sort of touched the soul of a nation whose philosophy was that we're all created equal, you know, endowed by God by certain inalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And so he just called to the conscience of our nation to live up to the true meaning of our creed.
What was life like for you when you were growing up in Southern Illinois as a young black student? Were you in segregated schools or integrated schools?
I've been in both. And believe it or not, my hometown, Brooklyn, Illinois, is a black community. Mm-hmm. We had African-American mayors and the police chiefs, and many of the merchants were of African descent. And
There are just a few towns in Illinois that are like that. Pembroke would be another.
Yes.
Brooklyn.
Uh-huh. Yes.
How big was Brooklyn?
Brooklyn was 2,200 at the time, but now it's probably about 1,200 or 1,400.
And is it still an all-black town?
It is still an all-black town. Huh. And as in all communities, I wouldn't say all communities, but all black communities, there are a few whites that come in and become a part of the town. Mm-hmm. You know, growing up, we've always had some white citizens there, but it's
perhaps married in.
Well, not necessarily. Yeah, that is one way.
Uh-huh.
But we did have some white families there during my childhood.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So. But was your school all black at
my
that
school,
time?
My school was all black. Believe it or not, years before I began school, that was many, many years ago, we did have separate school systems there.
Mm-hmm.
We had classrooms that were white in a separate school, and then we had the black school.
Oh, interesting.
And the few whites that lived in our town, they had their separate school.
Huh.
But we were able to overcome that. And by the way, education has always been very, very dear to my heart, and I served on the school board there in Brooklyn for 23 and a half years, serving as the president of the school board for at least a dozen of those years.
Hmm.
And so education has always been dear to my heart. That's probably one of the reasons that our local committee decided that we would pursue the scholarship program.
Hmm. We have a couple callers waiting. Let's go to line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guests, Claude Shelby and Ellen McDowell.
Thanks. When you begin speaking about the example of Martin Luther King, I'm always impressed in reading about his work and watching documentaries that he tended to be extremely practical, that private sessions of discussion always were on practical matters of getting the objective done. And toward the end of his work, in addition to the civil rights and equitable treatment under law, he had begun working a great deal for economic justice, treating people with what we might now call living wage and fairness, so that they could be citizens who could send their own children without need of scholarships. But as a practical matter, now that it's almost 20 years that this group has been working, what's been the increase in the amount of funds that a student needs? Sort of think of a particular place or school and think what you would have had to help with them 20 years ago and what help they might need now. How much increase practically does the scholarship need to be to help someone these days through school? I'll listen to what I hope is a discussion of practical matters.
Thank you for the question. And for other people who might like to call, the numbers again in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Elsewhere, a toll-free call, 1-800-222-9455. So on the practical issue of money, the expenses, of course, for college have gone up dramatically, but particularly for minority students. There often are a number of scholarships available. For example, at the University of Illinois, African-American students, Hispanic students, and others often can get many different scholarships in addition to the ones that we offer. Our scholarship help is relatively limited.
Very limited.
But we give out about how much a year? It's $70,000 or something?
Well, we give out at least $60,000 per year, somewhere in that neighborhood. But in addition to our $1,000 per student that we give, the University of Illinois matches the scholarships, as well as Tougaloo College in Mississippi.
And the university often gives free tuition and helps
well,
with
housing,
board.
Help out with the room and board as well.
Right.
And speaking of the increase, there has been quite an increase in the cost of education. And as Steve has said, our scholarship is relatively small. It would nowhere near cover the cost of a student's education. But we do give $1,000 per year for up to 4 years to each of our scholarship winners. And if they attend the University of Illinois, the university would match that with $1,000, as well as Tougaloo College, as we said before. And so we started out giving $500 scholarships on a one-time basis. After our second year of celebration, we had funds left over, and so we decided that we would start a scholarship program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have another caller waiting on line two. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Yes, just two comments. One, I'm very active in Empty Tomb and also in hospice. I wanted to know, here's my question. How do you think, you talked about Martin Luther King being eloquent and practical, but how can I be involved with Martin Luther King? And that I'll hang up and listen off the air. Thank you.
What can people do who want to help?
Well, certainly one of the most practical things one can do would be to help out in our scholarship funding. We need $60,000 to $70,000 each year of new funds in order to fund our scholarships and have a little bit to put into our endowment fund so that our scholarships will be perpetual. So we do have an endowment fund, and there are some individuals who give to the endowment, but most of our donors give to the current students that we fund each year.
How many people contribute money?
Oh, well, they can send the money to in care of Pastor Shelby, Salem Baptist Church, 500 East Park in Champaign, 61820.
And Steve, may I mention briefly about Herb Stevens?
Sure.
Having expired about 2 years ago, he was our main funding chair. And since Steve left us, we really have
Herb. Since Herb left us, yeah.
What did I say?
Since Steve, but I haven't left quite yet.
After Herb left us, we certainly haven't found an adequate replacement for him, although we have tried to fill in. And so
he was a real bulldog going around getting people to give money, wasn't he?
He certainly was, and we're still suffering now because he's not with us. And so all the more this need for funding certainly is exacerbated.
He was very generous himself and often was able to tell people who had the potential to give major amounts, look, I'm giving $5,000, I'm giving $10,000 this year, you should do the same. And
exactly.
We haven't found someone else who could do both.
I think Herb was saturated with the philosophy of Martin Luther King, and I might bring that up as far as the person who called and wondered what she could do.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that all of us can do is read the writings of Martin Luther King. Today I had time to read Loving Your Enemies, the letter from the Birmingham jail, and the Declaration of Independence from the war in Vietnam.
Hmm.
Reading his writings absolutely puts you in another dimension. This is another reason why it's so important to stop and remember Martin Luther King on a special day, because he isn't part of our everyday thinking. Mm-hmm. We have to back up and realize these tremendous and profound truths that he presented. And these writings are available. And I think this is the first step to action, is to become fully acquainted with his philosophy.
Thank you. We do have another caller waiting. Let's go to line one. Go ahead.
Hello. You know, I've got a question. It's just a little bit off the subject a little bit. I was wondering, is there ever any kind of celebration for Philip Randolph? You know, I mean, there was a guy who, you know, really had a lifelong history of change in this country. And not by any means am I trying to take anything away from Martin Luther King, but, you know, he's a very intriguing person who really brought a lot and worked with Martin Luther King also.
Well, Philip Randolph, certainly of the Pullman Porters, was a very, very important individual in the history of civil rights. And we do remember, his name is usually mentioned during Black History Month, during the month of February, but no particular day has been established for him.
I did see in the Chicago Tribune recently that a statue of Philip Randolph is going to be at the is being moved to the Pullman Museum down on the south side of Chicago to be part of that memory of the Pullman of the Pullman Workers Union that he helped establish and lead. So at least regionally in Chicago, there's that way of remembering Philip Randolph. But that's been a problem for many of our Black leaders through U.S. history. King, of course, is the only African American who has a national holiday in his honor, and yet there have been, of course, wonderful Black leaders over the decades and centuries.
Yes, there certainly have been, and certainly their contribution to our society certainly has not been forgotten.
We might ask Ellen, growing up, where did you grow up, Ellen?
Well, actually, I grew up very close to where Pastor Shelby grew up. I grew up in East St. Louis, mm-hmm. Illinois, and I attended Catholic parochial schools. And I graduated from high school in 1942, and while I was in high school, the nun who was the principal of our school attempted to integrate the school and was promptly moved by the bishop. Those were the times.
So that didn't happen until later.
It didn't happen until later. She was ahead of her time.
How did you gain your social consciousness?
Well, I think possibly from the environment in East St. Louis, what I observed, and also from my mother, who valued education highly and agreed that emancipation came from education. Also, I was acquainted with the Black churches in East St. Louis and early on learned the strength of the Black churches. And harking back to our first caller about the students and the fact that some young people now seem quite blasé about education, I've been very impressed with the refreshing quality of enthusiasm that our scholarship winners have. And I think nearly all of them are church connected, as far as I've been able to find out. And the values they express are very heartening.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've been a leader in the Catholic Worker House in Champaign. You were the financial officer for many years. You're still currently a volunteer and help coordinate other volunteers. That kind of a movement is an important part in American Catholicism, but it's a minority part, isn't it?
Well, it's not mainstream, mm-hmm. certainly, but I think it's almost a calling. People find themselves comfortable in the Catholic Worker movement and with the Catholic Worker philosophy. I certainly have. Dorothy Day's, one of her fundamental thrusts was against racism when the paper was founded in 1933. Mm-hmm. And I think she had an acute sense of social justice, and she realized how entrenched racism is in our society. She would, if she were alive today, she'd be working in that way. And for me, working at the Catholic Worker House and observing young people and young people who are growing older, I might say, who haven't had an opportunity, it's especially rewarding to me to be on this committee because I see people who have lost their sense of somebodyness, which is something that Martin Luther King used, lost their self-respect, lost their sense of somebodyness. And then to see these young people coming and accepting these scholarships with so much enthusiasm and promise is extremely rewarding to me.
When you first got involved with the Catholic Worker Movement, was that when you were here in Champaign or before?
Actually, it was when I was here in Champaign. It was in 1942 when I was here as a student, and I found a copy of the Catholic Worker newspaper in the Newman Library, and that was during World War II, and it was a pacifist paper, and it was the first pacifist expression I had ever read.
Interesting.
And I was blown away by that.
For listeners who may not know about Dorothy Day and the Catholic Worker Movement, could you give us a short synopsis?
The Catholic Worker Movement was founded by Dorothy Day, a journalist and a convert to Catholicism, actually, and a person who was born with a social conscience, and who dedicated her life to the poor. The first expression of the Catholic Worker was in a newspaper, which was sold at Union Square in New York for a penny a copy. And the purpose of the paper was to acquaint people with the social justice teachings of the Catholic Church, that everyone had a right to a decent wage, to decent housing. And, of course, back in those years, in 1933, labor was beginning, labor movement was beginning, and having a difficult time. And one of the reasons Day was attracted to the church was because of the encyclical Rerum Novarum, which had been published by Pope Leo XIII endorsing labor, which was a breakthrough at that time because in those days employers had complete control over their employees. So the movement has continued and burgeoned, and we have houses of hospitality. The Catholic Worker Movement has houses of hospitality throughout the United States.
Mm-hmm. How does a Roman Catholic and a Baptist, a white Roman Catholic, a black Baptist, get along on this committee? Have you found any rough spots, or has it been fairly easy over the years?
Well, I think Pastor Shelby and I see eye to eye on just about everything.
Wonderful.
And if you appreciate the spirituality of Martin Luther King, again, I can't say that enough. If you read his writings, if you acquaint yourself with his spirituality, barriers drop away like dew before the morning sun.
What are the issues today? What would Martin Luther King, what would Dorothy Day be fighting for in 2005? Is racism still a problem?
Oh, racism is definitely a problem. I think it's more of a problem because people think it's been taken care of because of the activism in the 60s in the civil rights movement. People think the problem's taken care of and they've gone back to sleep again.
What problems continue?
In every place. I think in the workplace, in education, in our interactions with people, and deep within us. The way we are aware of differences in our reluctance to really accept and know people fully.
Whites still have power and privilege that
yes.
others don't in this culture.
And we take it for granted. Uh-huh. It's easier to take it for granted. I mean, we're comfortable with this.
From your perspective, Claude?
Well, certainly when we think of Dr. King's dream of colorblind society, we realize that we've made some strides, but we still have a long way to go. And we know that racism is alive and well. And I think the best way to deal with racism is to acknowledge it. And as long as we think everything is okay, then we won't address the issues. But when we uncover it and find it, we need to bring it out into the open and deal with it forthrightly. We can have discussions, and we can try to get individuals to see our point of view.
Are there still parts of Champaign County where an African American is not welcome after dark?
I'm not so sure. That's a kind of tough question. Mm-hmm. I've never felt that I couldn't go any place in Champaign or Nevada. But maybe you're more aware of that than I am. Maybe I'm blind.
There are still parts of the county where there are not many African Americans who live there.
Oh, I know that. Yeah.
Which brings us back to the tremendous power of this program, the scholarship program, and what it has to offer, and how it dissipates fear. Education is the cure for fear. Martin Luther King was tremendously educated.
And we certainly appreciate the very fine work of this committee, and certainly Steve, being a member since 86. I didn't recall whether you were one of the initial members or not.
But might have been. I can't remember.
Since 86, that's a long okay. And certainly we appreciate all that you've done, and since Ellen has been aboard, we certainly appreciate all that she has done. She's done a great job as our secretary.
Let's repeat again when the celebration is in Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, the Great Hall. That's next Sunday, the 16th of January at 5 o'clock. It's a free celebration open to anyone of any faiths. Rabbi Klein will give the invocation. There'll be Christian pastors and people of other faiths there as well. The prayer breakfast is also open to the public. And that will be at Canaan Academy, just north of the Canaan Missionary Baptist Church at 402 West Main. The prayer breakfast will be the 17th, Monday the 17th at 8:30 in the morning. So all are invited to come to both of those events. And you may certainly, if you like, make a contribution at that time. Bring your checkbook to make a contribution for the scholarships. If you're unable to come to those events, you may also mail a contribution to Pastor Claude Shelby at Salem Baptist Church, 500 East Park Street, P-A-R-K, in Champaign, 61820.
And make your check out to the
Martin Luther King
Scholarship
Committee. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
John F. Kennedy said that what unites Americans and Canadians is far greater than what divides us. In the movie South Park, the Oscar-nominated song Blame Canada features the line, "They're not even a real country anyway." I'm Jim Fleming. Next time, under the best of our knowledge, we'll take a look at our neighbor to the north, Canada. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 Central Time here on WILL Urbana.
Programming on WILL is funded in part by a grant from TK Service Center, 806 Perkins Road in Urbana, offering automotive repair on cars and trucks by ASC-certified technicians. In business since 1984, they perform computerized engine diagnostics, alignments, brake and suspension work, and other repairs. A shuttle service for customers is also available. The phone number for TK Service is 344-0800 or on the web at tkservicecenter.com.
Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly cloudy during the evening, then becoming mostly cloudy. The low in the upper 20s with southwest winds around 10 miles per hour this evening, shifting to the northwest after midnight. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a chance of light rain in the afternoon. The high around 40 degrees with north winds around 10 miles per hour in the morning, shifting to the east in the afternoon. It's 6 p.m. Central Time. This American Life is next.